Welcome to Tax Breaks, a podcast by the Federation of Tax Administrators, where we delve into current subjects and their relevance to the realm of tax administration. Each episode of our podcast features conversations with esteemed professionals from government, academia, and the private sector. Our guests generously share their wealth of knowledge and unique perspectives, providing invaluable insights and expertise to our listeners. I'm Ryan Minnick, FTA's Chief Operating Officer, and this episode, I'm joined by Andrew Blasey, the CEO of Ethisys International. Andrew is an international ethicist with a deep well of experience working with the world's top companies and governments, helping them develop more ethical leadership and to inject the more modern principles of ethical leadership into their organizations as they engage with stakeholders. So this conversation for the next hour is incredible. We talk a little bit about ethical leadership. We dive into how leaders are changing in terms of their behaviors in order to better accommodate the new era of transparency. And I really just can't wait for you to hear all that Andrew has to share. And be sure to stick through to the end because he's got a few tips on how you can get started. And without further ado, here's our discussion with Andrew Blasey. Today, I'm joined by Andrew Blasey, who's the CEO of Ethisys International. And full disclosure to all of our listeners, former classmate of mine at William & Mary. So really excited to kind of bring that full circle many, many years later and talk a little bit about ethics in government and ethics in the international context and what we've got going on. So Andrew is the CEO and founder of Ethisys International. He is an international ethics expert and works with many of the Fortune 500 and the members of top nations, are the top nations around the world, their governments, on developing their ethical strategies and actually living the ethics that they identify. So, Andrew, welcome to the podcast, and it's so great to have you for our conversation today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ryan. It's great to be with you. Thank you to FTA and for the invitation, and of course, above and beyond all things, thank you for your leadership. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Awesome. So, how does one become an international ethics expert? I know we've talked about this several times, but I think our listeners would benefit from understanding, you know, what the job is, how you kind of came to it, and what kind of what the mission of Ethisys International is. I think that'll help the rest of our conversation.
Yeah, it's a great question to start off with, Ryan, because unless it's quite funny, unless you were approaching ethics from and sort of from the standpoint of just, you know, fundamental morality, right? Typically, you'd find ethicists would come from the world of academia. But to be a practitioner, you know, is quite a different story. And I think, you know, as with anybody who would be an ethics-centered individual, where it's what we breathe day in and day out, as a practitioner, I would imagine the story goes much the same. It's by happenstance, right? So my story, while unique, is not unique from the standpoint that many folks that find themselves in this particular world are people who've had their own sort of unique organic evolution. Originally, my intent early on in my career was to join the Foreign Service, right? My whole philosophy and approach was to become a diplomat for the United States. And through a variety of twists and turns, I quickly fell into a passion and interest in international commercial diplomacy, this notion that the world and its deeply interconnected systems is far more than just governments communicating to each other, but it's also businesses collaborating with each other through very diverse and complex supply chains, business engaging with government, and of course a wide variety of non-state actors, right, that constitute an increasingly challenging global system. And what I quickly realized is that as the world was globalizing, and as I was witnessing how businesses were interacting within this ever complex global system, ethical questions were beginning to merge all the time, right? Ethical questions in a world that was becoming and has become ever smaller and yet no less fraught, right, with challenges. It became quickly apparent to me early on in my career that there was something that was needed that very few people within the international commercial diplomacy arena were paying attention to. The sexy stuff at that time, and still in the case today for many people, is, you know, you see focus on intellectual property, you see focus on regulatory affairs and harmonization, market access, right? All of these types of things that are viewed as sort of hard needs in terms of international commercial diplomacy, But undergirding all of that has always been ethical practices and behavior. Do stakeholders trust each other enough to engage in more optimal outcomes? And, you know, Ryan, I've been very fortunate in that leaning into this space early on in my career proved very fruitful because we were at a major time of transition. The world has transitioned into a more ethics-focused era. And at Ethicist International, our focus is really now helping both the private sector and the public sector begin to realize and begin to fortify and strengthen themselves with an environment that's already upon us.
It's incredible. This is the, you know, the infrastructural piece of, you know, how international engagement and trust works. It makes complete sense that this is, at least from what you're describing here, it's a very logical pivot from, this is a different form of diplomacy, right? So it's no longer just a geopolitical landscape. It's now a geopolitical and corporate landscape because everyone's dealing with the same customer, the same constituent. And I think there's a point that you make pretty frequently that really sticks with me. I have to admit, I repeat it to people all the time because it seems so so poignant, which is that, you know, much like Europe didn't realize it was in the Renaissance until it was most of the way through it, you know, we find ourselves in an era of transparency, and we've probably been in it for quite some time. And I want you to talk a little bit about that. But the most important thing is that that era of transparency does have ramifications on the global population, how we engage with companies and with government agencies. And for everybody listening, I promise I'm going to tie this back to state government in a minute, but I want to set the stage a little bit with this.
No, you're quite right, Ryan, and thank you for the comments about the analogy. It's very true. You know, and for all of your listeners, but also for just people in general in a leadership role, the fundamental ethical tenets of things like accountability and responsibility, right, have always been with us. And you know, if I think about how ethics organizations and their ethical practices have evolved, not only here in the United States, but around the world over the past few decades, we saw, I would say, in the 1970s, 1980s, through the 2008 financial crisis, a real focus for organizations on the importance of who is responsible for a decision that is made, and then if something were to go wrong, who do we hold accountable? This is why during that period of time you saw tremendous focus on things that were quite reactive in nature. You know, let's take Enron, for example, which would be an example of an ethical failing, right? There was a lot of focus at that time, right, on what went wrong after the fact. There was very little focus on prevention of said activity. And then who do we hold accountable, right? Bernie Madoff, WorldCom, Tyco. We can keep going on and on and on about that particular period of time. But as you mentioned, Ryan, something has changed. And what we noticed is that change happened in and around the 2008 financial crisis, where not just again in the US, but around the world, public perception began to shift, where things, what was always assumed to be good faith acting and where the ethical tenets on the ascension of accountability and responsibility were alone really sufficient, were no longer sufficient. And the 2008 financial crisis coincided with other really important trends that would drive a greater focus on transparency and the need for organizations to earn trust with their stakeholders. Of course, social media and other major phenomenons around that time really pushed the notion that individual people everywhere had more access to information more readily than ever before. So this gets back to the point you're making that we make every day here, which is that the world is not only now center focused on ethics, but very specifically the ascent of two new ethical principles, transparency and respect. And we can spend a little bit of time talking about what transparency actually means in a moment, same with respect. But notice that these two ethical tenets, right, transparency and respect, these two elements indicate the importance of authenticity. We see this often now in terms of what types of leaders, for either a public or private organization, What type of leaders are people looking for? Well, we're looking for people, if transparency and respect of others is becoming more important relative to other ethical tenets, it suggests that this is really a question of leadership. But as I mentioned, Ryan, transparency in and of itself also comes with very important attributes that make it much more difficult to realize than perhaps people give it credit for. To be truly authentic and forthright in the decisions that we make as leaders, of course, keeping in mind privacy, we often hear that there is a time and a place to not be transparent for certain very specific reasons. But to be transparent in almost all things that warrant it, it requires other things for leaders to have that are often neglected or forgotten. It requires leaders to maintain explainability, right? Many leaders are not intentionally lacking in transparency. They can't fully explain all of the decisions that have to be made. So we spend a lot of time, for example, helping leaders to not only take center focus on the right degree of transparency, but how do we better explain the decisions that we make? And then, if necessary, what leaders often don't want to find themselves in a position to do is defensibility. Are leaders willing to defend openly the decisions that they make because the environment warrants greater transparency? So these are the types of things that leaders are now confronting in this new era. And when it comes to respect, Ryan, this is really critical. Leaders of organizations now have to spend more time without losing substantial amounts of their agility, right, and the efficacy of their decisions. They have to spend far more time respecting the implications of a potential decision on those that are affected, both internally and externally to their organizations, right? And this notion of respect is leading us to some new and important skills that leaders can develop that will ultimately embrace things like co-creation, which will better insulate an organization from challenges that could emerge from a particular decision that's made. So all's to say, Ryan, you're quite right. The world has entered a more transparent and respect-interested and oriented time, but it makes it very, very complicated for organizations to navigate.
Interesting. So, you know, a couple things come to mind as you were talking. You know, one, this doesn't sound surprising to me as someone who's kind of lived through that era, that stretch of time, and seen not only the shift in government, but the shift in the private sector and how people engage with at least their outside customers. You know, transparency does tie back to the notion of, you know, humans are incredibly accurate pattern recognizers, right? So, you know, humans are somewhat natural lie detectors. So a lot of authenticity has to come through. It has to be believable. It has to be trustworthy. People have to get enough information to understand and to believe and to trust what they're hearing, but they also have a certain amount of information they're willing to consume before they are oversaturated with information. So that's obviously a very complicated component of this. And then the other piece that really seems interesting, we have a regular speaker at some of our conferences who talks about generational differences. And the part that just kind of jumped out at me as you were talking is that the key differentiator between the late millennials and Generation Z, so not necessarily the millennials closer to Gen X, but the ones closer to Gen Z, is that in a workplace, the preferred work style includes explanation. So, you know, Gen X and kind of the very early millennial generation are all very used to, they're given a directive, there's a chain of command, you follow through, you might need a little bit of context, but you don't really need to understand why. Whereas as you trend younger in the generations, that question of why becomes critical and important to the point of job satisfaction. So people entering the workforce now don't find it satisfactory to just be given a task to do the task. They need to understand how it fits into the big picture. They need to understand the logic and reasoning behind it, not as a challenge to leadership, but as a desire and interest of being part of a corporate culture or a corporate decision, whether you're in a corporate environment or a public sector environment. So it's interesting the crossovers between what you're seeing, what you've seen in your practice and internationally, and what we're kind of seeing from other experts, seeing and hearing from other experts as we engage on this topic. So I think you know, obviously transparency comes back to quite a bit. Now, government in general, and I think I probably should have led with this because I know there's a lot of government folks that'll listen to this and think, you know, Ryan, why are we talking about ethics? We're the government. We're ethical by design. And I think that this would be a good time to talk about kind of the expanded definition of ethics. I think you touched on it when you were talking about starting Ethicist and kind of your experience with working with all of these organizations globally. But I do think there's sometimes a disconnect when people think, okay, you know, ethics is, you know, at its core, you know, am I trustworthy? Do I have values? Do I live those values? You know, am I behaving in a manner that is ethical? You know, very positive term. And when you call somebody unethical, very, very strong negative words. But it appears that, as you mentioned, those tenets have now been added to that scope of ethics, that there's now opportunities for what we would traditionally consider highly ethical entities and organizations, like governments and government agencies, to continue to grow in their application of ethics to their work in order to take advantage of some of these new principles and better connect with their stakeholders. So if you could kind of show us, you know, forward looking, like, where is that gray space that we can expand into in the topic of ethics as the public sector?
Yeah, this is great, Ryan. I'll give my thoughts to your good question by starting off with a bit of a provocative posture, which is, I would say that to most ordinary people, not just in the United States, but I think what we're seeing also around the world, unfortunately, there's not necessarily a view that government institutions are viewed as highly ethical organizations, either by perception or, in fact, by design. In fact, you know, it's been quite interesting for us to see. Some of your listeners may be aware of the Edelman Trust Barometer that is championed by the firm Edelman, which is one of the world's largest annual surveys focused. I think they survey over 30,000 people in diverse countries every year across a range of questions related to trust and society issues. It's very interesting, although in and of itself has encountered some questions as of late, but we'll put that aside. The interesting tidbit that I've seen from recent trends in this Edelman Trust Barometer, but from other sources, has actually shown that when it comes to perceptions of people and their governments, we've actually been seeing trust decline in government institutions over time. Now, there's many reasons for this. As I said, Ryan, trust is earned and lost for multiple reasons, but it has been fascinating to see now business as a whole increase, and this is from a relatively moderate starting point, but to increase in trust among citizenry relative to government. And I think this actually puts a lot of pressure on government institutions of many different kinds, again, here in the US and abroad, that it's not so much that government institutions are somehow separate from the private sector. Of course they are, but in the environment of competing for stakeholder and consumer trust, they actually are somewhat operating on similar playing fields, right? And so for institutions, I like the way you said, inherently meant to be ethical by design, that's true, or at least I hope that's true. There is a challenge that we are seeing where institutions are not trusted in the way that they should be. But I suppose, Ryan, that fundamentally doesn't matter. And here's why. Here's where the provocative posture goes even a bit further. It doesn't matter as much because what we're beginning to realize is that in the realm of ethics, right, we'll call it organizational ethics or business ethics, there is just no such thing as a perfectly ethical institution or a perfectly ethical ethics and compliance program. Because once leaders begin to realize that to be perfectly effective and to really achieve that perfection can only be the case for one particular stakeholder for an organization at one particular point in time. So to go back to your question about how can we embrace current learnings and needs to modernize our approach to ethics, it's what I know many of your members have heard me talk about before, which is we need to really begin this inherent shift towards reputational focus and risk and really shift that into a mindset of trust cultivation, but more specifically, trust cultivation with who our core stakeholders are in order for an organization to achieve its particular goals. So, you know, happy to kind of take on any further questions you have on that line of thinking, Ryan, but to underscore, I don't think governments should be complacent with this view that they may be more ethical than other institutions within a particular country. I think government institutions should, and their leaders, should work very hard to, and perhaps more so than many of them are able or willing to today, work very hard to build core trust internally and with their external stakeholders, because the environment is going to become ever more complex as the world continues this transition into a greater focus on things like transparency, on respect. For institutions to maintain their credibility and for them to be able to do what they need to do, there is a lot more that can be done.
Really, I find your slightly provocative posture actually really enlightening, because it's you're right. It is very interesting to see the, you know, I find fascinating the relative gains in trust of corporate over public sector. And, you know, as a technologist by training, I find, you know, my mind immediately went to, well, this makes sense from an engagement standpoint, even separate from if you never talk to a government agency leader as a citizen, you know, anyone listening to the podcast, you know, go renew your DMV registration for your car online right now, and then go shop at a large retailer using an app on your phone at the same time, and then tell me which experience is more indicative of a modern organization that is inherently working to earn that trust, to be transparent, to be easy to use. And I think that's where some of these practices may start to intersect with other behaviors. So, and I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, if these things may be related, because I think we focus a lot in government, I mean, at least on the technology side, modernizing the interfaces, making it so that it's easier to engage with government. We kind of throw it under the umbrella of transparency, that it's easier to get to your data, but to do so in a very secure and respectful of data privacy manner. But modernizing those interfaces tends to be a top priority. I mean, whether even it's something as simple as reformatting a website using modern standards takes a tremendous amount of time in the public sector, but we see tremendous returns in terms of engagement. And I, you know, I guess as you were talking, I was imagining all those things as building blocks to try to keep pace with the private sector in terms of that gain in trust with citizenry. And I know there's other components of it in terms of behavior, in terms of communication outward, but it would seem to me also kind of how you show up every day for your customer and the way that you engage with them is also going to be foundational to that relationship.
Well, particularly to that point, Ryan, particularly because in using your analogy, the customer of the governmental institution, the public sector organization, is a core stakeholder to that institution, right? They are vital in order for that organization to achieve its particular mandate or goals. And to preserve or build their trust, you have to necessarily meet or exceed their expectations, right? So can government institutions, just like businesses, do a better job in understanding the expectations of their stakeholders, customer or otherwise, today and into the future? Absolutely. And those expectations, much like trust, are wrapped into all of these ethical tenets that you and I have been talking about, you know, for the past many minutes here. And I think so that's really the at the core of it, right? At the core of your analogy with customers. I think we've seen many examples of sound innovation in the public sector, not just again in the US, but in different places around the world, including in the realm of tax, that have gone to great lengths to meet the expectations or exceed the expectations of customers or of stakeholders, and in return have really garnered trust. And I think that we're still early days into this laboratories of ideas where governments can help each other strengthen the services that they provide in order to really meet or exceed those expectations. I think there's tremendous room for improvement and growth, of course, with the caveat that government is not business, right? Government has certain jobs that are mandated for by regulation, by law, right? And therefore, they have to be in adherence to those provisions that are set by our public institutions. I would say, though, that there is tremendous gray today than perhaps there has been in the past. And I think there's a greater acceptance or willingness perhaps today in many different places for governments to drive a bit more innovation in meeting their stakeholders' expectations. I do think there is more oxygen for this. And so then maybe, Ryan, it comes to a question of leadership, you know, which happy to share more about in terms of where this realm of ethics and culture meets that realm of leadership in order for organizations to achieve their goals.
Well, and it's interesting, it's, you know, two things that I'll prompt you with next. So obviously this is requiring a fundamentally, you know, evolved or different kind of leader, because I think about the intersection of those two things, kind of two distinct trails you were talking about, which is, you know, a leader, organizational leader that can move, you know, actionable priorities forward that relate to experience. So it may be somebody, you know, for example, to keep it in the tax world, the IRS, of course, commissioner of the IRS right now is a former BCG, Boston Consulting Group alumnus, and also a former IRS executive leader. So from an execution standpoint, walking an agency through it's probably its largest modernization effort, certainly its best funded modernization effort in its history, you need that tactical expertise. But then on the flip side, what I'm hearing is that, you know, leaders also need to have these skills now inherent to kind of building trust and setting example and behaving in a authentic manner. And, you know, I find Danny Werfel, current IRS commissioner, really easy to engage with. He probably meets all those criteria, but I can't imagine there's many leaders out there who inherently have both of those skill sets. I mean, traditionally, I think you see a lot of leaders who sit in the, you know, this what I'll call the soft skill or the soft and squishy, to be cute, era, where they are, you know, highly authentic and they really focus on people and culture. And then there are leaders who are, you know, more traditional executors, the GE and the IBM alumnuses, who tend to focus on efficiency over all else and implementation of projects. So how do you see from your perspective, working with all of these leaders, kind of the merging of those two philosophies into the new generation of leaders that are going to, you know, kind of carry forward all of these kind of ethical tenets into their organizations?
Yeah, that's great, Ryan. I think at its core, let's take a step back. At its core, ethics is all about leadership. The two are in many ways inseparable. You know, the ability for leaders to make and then reinforce sound decision-making when confronted with difficult dilemmas. Sometimes those dilemmas involve maximizing two potential good outcomes. Which one do I pick that will lead to the greatest outcome of the two? Other decisions that are completely uncertain between what is good and what is bad, you know, quote unquote, and difficult decisions that involve two negative outcomes, and it's trying to decide which of the two or more negative outcomes will allow an organization or a team to best achieve its goals over the long term. So ethics and leadership are inextricably linked. So therefore, Ryan, whether you're in the public or the private sector and you're a leader in an organization, it requires sound moral grounding, right, in our leaders. So that's principle. Are the people that are in positions to make decisions, do they have sound moral grounding? That's a good place to start. But then do they have the skill sets, the individuals that are placed within positions of making these types of decisions, that would enable them to balance the agility that you're talking about? It's extremely important that leaders have the ability to make agile decisions and they're not bogged down, as well as that there is clarity within organizations about who owns a decision. Many organizations fall into the trap of, you know, complete democratic selection of decisions, right? So that no one actually owns it, and then everybody is, there's no accountability because we all made a decision together, right? So leaders are willing to take risks in the decisions that they make, and they're willing to do so at a speed that allows for success. but also at the same time is one that can balance that with sound processes and frameworks that underpin their moral grounding, right? A lot of organizations, you hear of leaders that are sort of shoot from the hip, right? I'll put my finger up into the wind and I'll make a decision based on how I feel. That's not ethical leadership, right? You need individuals that can strike the right balance across that. There's something else that's really important too, Ryan, when we talk about ethical leadership. It's not just about the decision that a leader takes that makes them ethical. This is the biggest folly we see today. So for your listeners, I think this is particularly important. If you are only worried about or thinking closely about making sure you alone make the right decisions as definition of whether you are an ethical leader, that alone is only half the equation. You also have to think about the environment that you are establishing for those around you in order to help them make sound ethical decisions. Right? So an ethical leader is not judged based purely on their own decisions, but by on the decisions that others make around them, right? And that's hugely important, because what then that suggests, right, is that ethical organizations are comprised of a merger between deep care for ethical leadership and deep care for ethical culture. So this is where culture comes in, and it often gets siloed or oddly segmented with this notion of what constitutes a strong ethical leader and what constitutes a strong ethical culture within an organization. There's inextricably linked. So taking the time to understand what great looks like in terms of ethical leadership and culture, Ryan, is a very good place for your leaders to start, including and especially in government, right? I wouldn't say, oh, this is only something for business to be thinking about. No, it's absolutely something for public sector organizations to constantly think about. Then, if that wasn't enough, Ryan, that's only half of the story of ethical organizations and ethical leadership. What we've just been talking about is primarily internal, yet for the past 30 minutes or so, we've also been talking about what's changing in our external environment. Ethical leadership and ethical organizations also reflects upon the role of their organization within their wider external environment. Ergo, the rise of what we've increasingly been talking about and what we call the stakeholder economy that both of our private and public sector organizations tend to find themselves in today. It's very difficult for organizations to break out of their silo of thinking that within their four walls, or only one lawyer or consultant phone call away, we have all the answers that we need to make any particular decision that should be made within our organization. That is not true anymore. And if we are in fact accepting of the stakeholder economy that's around us, leaders really will start to embrace co-creation without losing their effectiveness as an organization. How will I begin as a leader to recognize the implications of a decision that I want to make for my organization internally, but also what ramifications will it have externally, not on things like social media, not everyone under the sun, but as we said earlier, Ryan, with the core stakeholders that matter most to our organization in order for us to achieve our goals and objectives. It sounds like common sense, but you'd be so surprised at how neglected that is in any organization today. It's very, very common. So you asked, what else can leaders do? Well, very practically, does every FTA member or anyone and everyone listening to the podcast today, do they actually know who their core stakeholders are? Truly, have they really thought deeply about who do I need, who does my organization need to achieve its success now, 3 years from now, 10 years from now? Who are going to be the most important people that we need to ensure they are strongly bought in and trusting to our organization, right? And if we know that, right, if we know who those stakeholders are, Do you feel confident that those organizations, those stakeholders, I should say, trust you? Do they trust you? If you know your organization, if you know your stakeholders, and you know or don't know or understand that they may not perfectly trust you, you have a problem. Your organization has a problem. You can't inherently call yourself an ethics first organization or an ethical entity or ethical leader, if you are plowing into the future, not knowing who the stakeholders are that are affected by the decisions your organization makes, and not knowing whether or not those stakeholders actually trust you. Otherwise, it's as we say in our community, it's ethics washing, right? Anybody can call themselves an ethical person, an ethical leader, an ethical organization, but I think that's where we fundamentally land, Ryan, in terms of if you know who your affected stakeholders are, and you know that these organizations trust you and you're setting up along this journey together, you will encounter much greater resiliency, right? I think Ryan, we're going to hear the word resiliency used a lot more in the decade ahead. Those organizations are going to become a lot more resilient in the face of any challenge that could surface against them politically, reputationally, quote unquote, you know, some kind of media coverage that's adverse, right, or what have you. So hopefully that's helpful to some of your listeners, Ryan.
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, you've touched on a few components here that I think show up, and like everything, the world's interconnected, right? So this is interconnected to so many other business principles. You know, today we've talked about the importance of authenticity, the importance of transparency. Now we've talked about the kind of evolution of stakeholder engagement and how you have to, you know, you have to show up for your stakeholders. All of these principles are starting to show up in other ways and other places throughout, you know, call it business theory, call it the execution of a modern organization. And this is so helpful to hear how all of this ties back into kind of ethical leadership and ethical organizations, because I think as we list things off, hopefully, I mean, I think I was doing the same thing for my organization that I think many listeners are going to do for theirs. As I'm listening to your explanations, I'm thinking, okay, these are things we do really well. This is potentially an area where maybe we do that really well, but have we ever thought about how that connects back to a different principle or to a different activity that we're doing? So it seems that there's a lot of opportunities for growth here, and this is just as much a framework as it is a practice and a way of leading in a way that we're going to have to lead in order to continue to kind of maintain the trust of, you know, I'll go specific to tax agencies. Our stakeholders, of course, are taxpayers, right? The principal goal of a tax agency is as much voluntary compliance, so as much of your citizenry base as possible who have a desire to pay their taxes, who can understand and fill a form out, who can remit their taxes and pay them on time and do it accurately. Like if you can have the highest percentage of that group of people engaging with you as possible, then your resources can be best spent to not only deliver better services to those, to the people who are doing it correctly, who have a desire to do it correctly, but it also lets you dedicate resources to people who are intentionally not doing that correctly. So whether it be fraud or crime or underreporting, or maybe it's people who sit in the middle who have a desire, but don't have the ability because of a language barrier or because of a access barrier to information. So as I think about, as we optimize for our end customer in taxation, these are all really helpful principles to think about, because I think different groups of that end customer are expecting different things of the organization. I guess the last thing I'll ask, I know we're kind of coming up on 40 minutes or so talking, but expectations keep coming out in our conversation. And I guess my last question for you before we kind of wrap up and ask for, you know, some more resources, people to learn more, is as we meet people's expectations, the natural tendency is that those expectations start to shift, right? So the moment that you need a mobile app from me and I deliver a really great mobile app, well, now you want that mobile app to do different things, or now you want it to be even better. So this is, you know, what we've outlined today, and I think it's important to underscore, this is going to always be an evolving and moving target, which, you know, explains why, you know, you have an entire firm dedicated to this work, because I think just as soon as we think we're good at it, there's something else that we're going to get from either a cultural change or a stakeholder change or a leadership change that's going to require us to, in some cases, level up or pivot. So how should, you know, you gave some really great tips for people looking to kind of get started. When it comes to meeting expectations and the growth of expectations from stakeholders, is it possible to have a best practice in this area, or is this just a pitfall that we all have to be aware of as the better work you do, the more that's expected of you?
Yeah, very astute observation, Ryan. I mean, it is true that expectations on the part of any organization stakeholders, if we use the case of, as you said, of taxpayers, of course, those expectations will continue to evolve in such a way where, in order for any organization to preserve that stakeholder's trust, they must continuously understand how those expectations are evolving and work hard. You know, as the old adage goes, trust is very difficult to earn, but very easy to lose. And that is the case for any organization and for any leader. And, you know, a part of it, Ryan, is thank goodness expectations are always evolving and changing, because hopefully as expectations are evolving and changing, it generally is a signifier that either our sector or our society as a whole is progressing, right, is becoming a better, happier, healthier, more inclusive place. And I think that's important, right? And certainly, if for nothing else, to the point that you've been mentioning a few times, the way technology and innovation has continued to gain speed at such rapid clip, as those technologies are introduced to various stakeholders, taxpayers or otherwise, right, expectations are naturally going to shift. There is one thing in particular that I can underscore for your listeners that I think is important to recognize in a fast-paced environment where expectations are continuing to change, and therefore we have to sort of constantly keep focus on how we garner trust, especially from the context of ethical leadership and decision making. And this might be hard for some government entities or institutions to really wrap their hands around, right? What we're beginning to realize is that in an environment of increasing change and evolution, right, especially as you said, Ryan, in stakeholder expectations, principles-based approaches in ethics, as opposed to purely normative-based or norms-based approaches, are increasingly where good practice is landing for leaders. What does that mean? Well, in an environment where change was relatively modest, it made a good sense that best practices be constantly codified into protocol and procedure. In an environment where year after year, very little would change, right, which was the case in many different sectors and spaces for a long time, you know, we got used to building up catalogs of norms and then having the time to train and upskill our teams to align with those norms. That's going to be very, very difficult from this point going forward for any organization to do. And the sheer volume of norms, you know, I would be even a skeptic that AI can solve this problem. There's a lot of people peddling that artificial intelligence will strengthen human enablement for more norms. I actually think that good leaders should be running in a different direction on this, which is embracing sort of strong principles-based approaches, Ryan. No matter what happens to technology or no matter what happens to affect our stakeholders' expectations, taxpayers or otherwise, it's going to be important to uphold accountability. It's going to be important to uphold responsible decision making, right, on the part of leaders. It's going to be important to uphold notions of transparency, of respect, of integrity, right, independent decision making and judgment. These things are not going to change. So then, if that's the case, how are leaders and how are organizations embracing processes that actually empower those within the organization with stronger moral grounding to confront basic decisions that they need to make? So that I'll kind of cap that off by saying I think there's a lot more we can do as leaders to empower our organizations with sounder, more strengthened principles-based approaches that will then strengthen the ability to deal with the gray, right? Of course, again, in public institutions, this is hard, where norms tend to dictate everything. There's a procedure and a protocol for every individual thing. One other comment too, Ryan, might be that I might suggest, and you would know better than I might suggest that while the taxpayer is a vitally important stakeholder, right, for tax authorities, there are other stakeholders, mm-hmm. right, that tax authority leaders within tax authorities can work with to achieve their goals, taking sort of this multi-stakeholder lens or dimension. I might suggest that there probably are even greater things that tax leaders, administrative leaders, can do to partner, for example, with those in policy making, right, to help them better understand the expectations of, say, taxpayers and what would enable their satisfaction and happiness in a way that would then endear greater trust and achieve the goals that you were mentioning before, Ryan. I do think that there's going to be a need for greater lean-in to meeting stakeholder and taxpayer expectations in such a way that, again, improves things like streamlining and, you know, meets the taxpayer where they are, right, in order to garner that trust within the institution. So again, if that's possible, you know, you would know better than I, Ryan, about the tactics with how a tax leader, administrative leader, can do such things. But it strikes me that taking a more holistic, strategic view of who your stakeholders are and what might be possible is going to be pretty critical. Because if you only keep a one stakeholder dimension lens, you might be losing out on opportunity to affect the right change in a wider community of actors.
No, absolutely. Well, and it further validates your expertise to hone in on that, the nuances of that stakeholder model, because you're completely correct. I mean, the end taxpayer is a stakeholder, and depending on the tax type, they may be the largest, but oftentimes, you know, third-party software providers or practitioners or policymakers in their own very different ways are all highly critical stakeholders, if not equally critical to the actual taxpayer. So whether it's providing information in a nonpartisan way to policymakers to help them understand the impacts to administer whatever it is that they're proposing, whether it's engaging with practitioners in the software community on understanding exactly, you know, a lot of times people think, and especially in tax, that tax rules, regs, forms are created by the tax agency and are perfectly, in a perfect world, perfectly understandable. Anybody off the street could read them and interpret them and be compliant and do what they need to do. But as you may know, as the founder of an organization, I mean, there's a lot in tax law and policy that's a little bit more ambiguous. And so there is an entire functional industry, you know, the tax practitioner industry and the tax software industry that exist to help continue that mission of engaging with the end taxpayer and providing that level of, you know, context, comfort, and otherwise. So I think, you know, to your point about the stakeholder network being very complex, and then even having first order and second order stakeholders that have different engagement requirements in order to kind of continue to push forward the ethical work or the trust and transparency work, such that by the time the taxpayer, wherever they are, whatever stage of the process they are, receives information, they trust every link in the process. And we've seen in recent history different elements of that chain. We've seen software errors that you know were not necessarily anybody's fault, but software errors that impacted people's ability to file accurate returns. We've seen tax practitioners who have been indicted on criminal charges who, you know, were not being truthful and honest with their clients and who were not being good partners to the revenue agencies to which they were filing. And again, these are small examples of two very large industries that are, typically speaking, highly trustworthy and highly highly authentic and highly engaged. But to your point about trust, very very quick to lose and very, very hard to earn. And so it's really, I appreciate that advice for our tax administrator listeners to look broadly in the stakeholders that they engage with, whether in their specific role in an agency, if somebody's a little bit more defined in your business role or your technical role listening to the podcast, or whether you're an agency leader, a tax commissioner, and you're engaging with all of these stakeholders from your legislature all the way through to taxpayers at the end. You know, taking Andrew's very sage advice and insights from today's conversation and applying them to your work will help you, you know, down this journey towards being a more ethical leader. And actually, it sounds like, you know, Andrew, not to oversell the supplement or the vitamin here, but it sounds like a highly ethical leader is a more effective leader in so many other measurable ways. So this has been an incredible conversation. I look forward to not only continuing to touch base on this in the future. It sounds like it's an always evolving topic, but also continuing our work as an organization to, you know, partner with you all wherever we can to help bring, you know, your insights and knowledge from your work with these leading organizations globally into, you know, state tax and revenue, which I always tell people is like the most important infrastructure that no one ever talks about in the United States. So thank you.
Well, no, thank you, Ryan, and to FTA. I think it's a real testament for your organization and for your members and those that drive the process to see the strong connection that exists between the realm of ethical leadership and decision making with the important work that you and your members do on a day-to-day basis. And I think what we're beginning to see now is greater focus across many different types of sectors and communities of actors that are really starting to understand the central role that the types of things we've been talking about in our conversation today underpin so much else, if not everything else. And maybe I'll part with one more comment, which would be along these lines, that I would actually suggest that the role of platforms and associations and entities like FTA becomes ever more important when thinking about not only everything we've been discussing today, but the role of collective solutions. You know, one of the things that we perhaps have not touched on as much that would take a whole nother chapter, a whole nother podcast, would be this notion of collective action. There is increasingly going to be a need in order for ethical leaders to achieve and meet and exceed their stakeholders' expectations to not work alone. So in conclusion, Ryan, I would actually suggest the work that you guys are doing at FTA becomes more important than ever, not just in the traditional ways that platforms like FTA have been working in the past. Increasingly, it's going to be about bringing different stakeholders together that otherwise would not be meeting if not for the platform to strengthen the outcomes and to allow those different entities to meet or exceed the expectations of each other and of the wider environment. So thank you, Ryan, very much. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you.
Awesome. Well, thank you. And before we go, I just wanted to ask you, you know, we always ask our guests to catch us up on any important projects they've got going on or anything they want to plug or any additional resources they want our listeners to turn to. So wanted to give you a few seconds to highlight what Ethisys International is up to.
Well, thank you, Ryan. I mean, I'll be pretty magnanimous in this regard. You know, we're up to a lot of creative things here at Ethisys International. I know from the past, our conversations, a lot of your listeners and members have asked for sound resources and whatnot. So I'll be sure that we provide FTA with some suggested resources in case members who are listening have interest and want to follow up on how they can learn more about this space. There are tremendous thought leaders within this space, people that we, for my own part and for our team, we learn from every day, people that we interact with and people that we don't interact with. But there are some fantastic new books and literature that's coming out that really starts to underscore a lot of the ideology and approach that we at Ethisys International, we take. So I'll start off answering your question by saying if any listeners want more information, they should feel free to reach out to you. And of course, we can help provide them with further direction and information on where to turn. For our part, Ryan, at Ethisys International, we have a lot going on. When it comes to helping individual organizations, we have a tremendous number of streams underway to empower top-level leadership within organizations that are grappling with either very specific ethical dilemmas that they're not sure how to navigate, or they're looking for a partner to devise a more sustainable framework for ethical leadership and decision making. So to the extent that's of interest to any one of your members or listeners, that's what we do day in and day out. And then in terms of sector-wide based initiatives, there is a lot happening that we do that transverses borders, transverses any one particular organization to major scale partnerships. And what I can say on this point, Ryan, is that there's a lot that we are involved in and that we are engaged in that I think will hopefully see a lot of tremendous benefits in the years ahead that can range from how leading healthcare organizations address certain needs that are emerging within their particular space, how other industries are grappling with new and exciting opportunities, but also challenges born through artificial intelligence and many new changes in technology. And then to even some of the biggest sort of geopolitical or more sensitive areas that are beginning to emerge. For example, how will democracies begin to address things like responsible political engagement, which for your listeners, I think is very important. They may not be involved in tax policy formation as tax administrative authorities, but at the same time, they are so profoundly impacted by how policymakers and how the economy dictates the way taxation should be administered as a whole. We're going to see a lot more of what you and I have been talking about in terms of greater transparency and respect begin to inject itself into the policymaking process as a whole. So I think for our part, to the extent that's of interest to any of your members or folks who are listening, I think that's going to be an important space to watch.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Andrew. Andrew Blasey, CEO, Ethicist International, now a good friend of the FTA podcast. Thanks for taking the time, and we'll catch up again soon.
Thank you, Ryan. Take care.